Hi. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. My name is Jenna Walker for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Again, that number is 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Barron's. And depending on enough time, not all Barron's tonight. So let's begin. Here's how much the average working boomer has saved for retirement. This article appeared on MarketWatch June 23, 2022 by Brent Ahrens. Three news items say a lot about the retirement crisis facing Americans and what we can do about it, if you want to. The first is a survey of 1,000 working Americans conducted recently showing how much or little they have saved for retirement, and the picture isn't so much bleak as devastating. Less than half of those surveyed had saved $100,000, not even close enough to support a median income of around $40,000 a year in retirement. One in six say they have saved nothing. A third are continually making no contributions. And it's not just the young who do at least have decades to make up the ground. Respondents who are working with the median age of 60 have an average savings of $112,000. One quarter of those surveyed, and 30% of millennials, said they're planning to rely on cryptocurrency to finance some of their golden years. Yes, good luck with that. Meanwhile, the crypto bubble continues to deflate. The survey was conducted on behalf of home financing and real estate website Anytime Estimate. Probably the saddest part of the survey was around 80% of people expected to see their living standards fall in retirement, while 10% feared they wouldn't be able to retire at all. For those who are young, the only answer is to save more, save early, and invest better, which usually means investing a long-term asset like stocks and keeping your costs low. Those who are older don't have the luxury. In most cases, they'll need to rely on Social Security to provide the bulk of their retirement income. That brings me to the second item, yet more information on how Social Security's underlying investments are doing. In a word, badly as usual. The Social Security dollar forcibly extracted from your paycheck have poured so far this year into buying bonds interest rates between 1.625 and 3%. This at a time where consumer price inflation is running nearly 9%. Last, your FICA dollars have blown on bonds paying 1.4% interest, and in 2020 less than 1%. So large chunks of money have already gone to what an old friend of mine used to call money heaven. No wonder Social Security is in a deepening financial crisis. The fund, almost ubiquitously among all pension plans in the world, is invested entirely in low-paying U.S. Treasury bonds. If you're thinking that sounds like an unwise investment policy, you're right. But there is zero desire in Washington to change it. They like the cheap loans. They'd rather cut your benefits, which is what they're fixing to do. Social Security is a defined benefit rather than a defined contribution retirement plan. So your benefits aren't directly tied to the investment returns from the underlying assets. Instead, your benefits are set by law, but are supposed to be financed by the underlying assets. The poor investment return mean those assets are running out, which is why people are talking about cutting Social Security benefits. Heaven forbid they should improve the returns. Compare and contrast the sovereign wealth fund run by others, less incompetent national governments around the world. Australia's Future Fund just announced a change of leadership. Chief Investment Officer Sue Blake is standing down for personal reasons. The Australian Fund invests money on behalf of the Australian people, just as Social Security was supposed to invest on behalf of the American people. But there's a big difference. Australia invested the money sensibly in stocks, real estate, infrastructure, timberland, government bonds, corporate bonds, and so on. Australia's Future Fund was set up in 2006. Since then, it's averaged a return of 8.4% a year, well above the targeted, and enough to increase the public's original investment by 206%. Out of curiosity, I had a look at the equivalent numbers for the Social Security Fund. Since 2006, it's earned an average of 3.8% a year, enough to increase an investment by just 80%. Australians have earned literally more than three times as much money as we have, which is why we have the retirement crisis. Luckily, lucky thing that everyone has saved enough privately, correct? Next article, also Barron's, written by Elizabeth O'Brien. It's dated June 23rd, 2022. Senate advances bill to raise age for RMDs to 75. Senate Finance Committee advanced a bill on Wednesday that would raise the age of required minimum distributions from retirement accounts to 75, alongside other provisions designed to strengthen American retirement security. The Enhanced American Retirement Now, or, of course, an acronym, EARN, Act, is half of the Senate's version of the Secure Act 2.0. The retirement legislation that the House of Representatives passed in March. The other half, called Rise and Shine Act, moved out of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee earlier this month. Part of the lawmakers' job is now to reconcile these versions and agree on a final version of what would become the second major retirement bill in less than 3 years, a successor to the Secure Act of late 2019. The legislation is unlikely to progress to a vote before the full Senate, since there are relatively few legislative days remaining in the year for the chamber already packed agenda, says Paul Rickman, Chief Government and Political Affairs Officer at the Insured Retirement Institute. Instead, the most likely path for passage is the House and Senate committee members to work together behind the scenes to craft a bill that would be attached to another piece of legislation that must pass by the end of the year, like a spending bill. Now that we have a framework of what could go into the final bill, Rickman says, while passage is not guaranteed, the legislature's strong bipartisan support gives it a greater likelihood of success, he noted. Lawmakers next need to agree on details. For example, the EARN Act would raise the age for required minimum distributions to 75 from the current 72, effective after 2031. And while the House version calls for a more phased approach that would raise the age to 75 by 33, permitting employers to provide matching contributions to 401ks and other tax-preferred retirement plans for employees' student loan payments as if those payments were retirement contributions effective 2023. It would require catch-up contributions to an employer retirement plan for savers age 50-plus to be made as after-tax Roth contributions effective 2023, allowing participants between the age of 60 and 63 to contribute an additional $10,000 in catch-up contributions to 401k plans, indexed for inflation, effective 2024, and requiring an employer with a 401k plan to permit part-time employees with at least 500 hours of service in two consecutive years to participate in the plan, effective 2022. Down from the three consecutive years as outlined in the Secure Act. There's nothing in there that's earth-changing, but there are these small changes that can have incrementally beneficial effects, says Michael Krebs, co-chair of the Retirement Service Group at Groom Law Group. It seems like a good government to me. Next from Barron's, the financial planning section. 10 exceptions that will let you make a penalty-free early IRA withdrawal, if you must. Bill Bischoff, MarketWatch, June 23, 2022. All the free money from government has been spent, and inflation is raging. Pardon me. Now you're facing a vicious cash shortfall. What do you do? One possible solution is taking an early withdrawal from your IRA. By early withdrawal, I mean one that occurs before age 59 and a half. Needless to say, there are federal income tax implications, including the possibility of getting socked with the dreaded 10% early withdrawal penalty. Here's what you need to know to make a well-informed decision. Early withdrawal from an IRA are usually taxable, but a penalty tax can often be avoided. Pardon me. In almost all cases, all part of a withdrawal from the traditional IRA will count as a taxable gross income. The taxable percentage depends on whether you've made any non-deductible contributions to the account. If you have, each withdrawal consists of a proportionate amount of your total non-deductible contribution and part of the tax rate. Proportion part of each withdrawal that consists of deductible contributions and accumulated earnings is taxable. If you've never made any non-deductible contributions, 100% of the withdrawal is taxable. While it might be impossible to avoid triggering taxable income by taking withdrawal before 59 and a half, you might be able to avoid a penalty of 10% on early withdrawals by taking advantage of the exceptions explained below. The penalty tax exception for early withdrawal from traditional IRAs. The following exceptions to the 10% penalty tax are available for early withdrawal before 59 and a half from traditional IRAs, which for this purpose include simplified employee pension, that's a SEP IRA, accounts, and simple IRAs. The first one is substantial equal periodic payments, or SEPs, S-E-P-P-S. There are annual annuity-like withdrawals that must be taken for at least 5 years or until you reach age 59 and a half, whichever comes first. The rules for the SEPs are complicated. You might want to get your tax advisor involved to avoid pitfalls. Withdrawals for expenses. Medical expenses. If you have qualified medical expenses in excess of 7.5% of adjusted gross income, AIG or AGI, early IRA withdrawals up to the amount of the excess are exempt from the 10% penalty. However, the medical cost must be paid in the same year you take the early withdrawal. Withdrawals for qualified higher education expenses. Early IRA withdrawals are penalty-free to the extent of qualified higher education expenses paid during the same year. The qualified expenses must be for the education of the account owner or the account owner's spouse, child, stepchild, or adopted child of the account owner or the account owner's spouse. Withdrawals to pay health insurance premiums during unemployment. This exception is available to an IRA owner who has received unemployment compensation for 12 consecutive weeks under any federal or state unemployment compensation law during the year in question or the preceding year. If the condition is satisfied, the IRA owner early withdrawals during that year in question are penalty-free up to the amount paid during that year for health insurance premiums to cover the account owner, their spouse, and dependents. However, early withdrawals after the account owner has regained employment for at least 60 days don't qualify for this exception. Withdrawals for birth or adoptions. Penalty-free treatment for a qualified birth or adoption distribution withdrawal. That means a distribution made during the one-year period beginning on the date when the eligible child of the account owner is born or the date when the legal adoption of an eligible adoptee of the account owner is finalized. An eligible adoptee means any individual other than the child of the account owner's spouse who has not attained the age of 18 or is physically or mentally incapable of self-support. The maximum penalty-free qualified birth or adoption distribution for any eligible birth or adoption is $5,000. And the limit is apparently applied on an individual-by-individual basis. So when both members of a married couple have eligible retirement account, Each spouse can apparently receive a $5,000 penalty-free qualified birth or adoption distribution. Withdrawal for first-time homeowners, a $10,000 lifetime limit. The exception allows penalty-free IRA withdrawals to the extent of money spent by the account owner within 120 days to pay for qualified acquisition costs for a principal residence. However, there is a lifetime $10,000 limit on this exception. The principal residence can be acquired by the account owner or the account owner's spouse, the account owner's child, grandparent, or spouse's child, grandparent, grandchild. The buyer of the principal resident and their spouse, if the buyer is married, must not have owned a present interest in a principal resident within a two-year period by the end of the acquisition date. Qualified acquisitions costs are defined as costs to acquire, construct, or reconstruct a principal residence, including closing costs. Withdrawals by military reservists called to active duty. This exception applies to certain early IRA withdrawals taken by military reserve members who are called to active duty for at least 180 days for an indefinite period of time. Number 8, withdrawals for disability. This exception applies to amounts paid to an IRA owner who is found to be physically or mentally disabled to the extent that he or she cannot engage in his or her customary gainful activity or comparable gainful activity. In addition, the disability must be expected to lead to death, be a long-term, indefinite duration. However, the disability need not be expected to be permanent to satisfy the preceding requirement. Number 9, withdrawals to satisfy IRS levies. This exception applies to early IRA withdrawals taken to pay IRS levies against the account. However, the exception is unavailable when the IRS levy against the IRA owner as opposed to the IRA itself, and then the owner withdraws IRA funds to pay the levy. Number 10 is withdrawals after death. Amounts withdrawn from an IRA after the account owner's death are always free of a 10% tax penalty. However, the exception is not available for funds rolled over into a surviving spouse IRA, or if the surviving spouse elects to treat the inherited IRA as his or her own account. If the surviving spouse needs some of the inherited funds, they should be left in the inherited IRA, the one still treated as having been set up for the decedent spouse. When the surviving spouse can withdraw the funds from the inherited IRA without 10% penalty, thanks to the exception. What about early Roth IRA withdrawals? The immediate tax result will probably be better for an early Roth IRA withdrawal before 59.5 than an early traditional IRA withdrawal. That's because you won't owe any federal income tax on early withdrawals that consist of an annual Roth IRA contribution or contributions from converting a traditional IRA into a Roth. These federal income tax-free dollars are deemed to come out of the account first. Under a weird but true rule, you can owe a 10% early withdrawal penalty, but no federal income tax on withdrawals that consist of conversion contribution dollars, but you only owe the penalty if the withdrawal occurs within 5 years of the conversion contribution. And all of the exceptions to the 10% penalty tax explained in the context of early withdrawals from a traditional IRA apply equally here. After you've withdrawn the annual contribution and conversion contribution dollars, what's left in your Roth account consists of account earnings. Withdrawals of account earnings are fully taxable unless you've had at least one Roth account open for more than 5 years and you are 59.5. Okay. And the bottom line, early withdrawals from IRAs could be a last resort. As explained, most all of an early IRA traditional withdrawal will probably be taxable. and the withdrawal could push you into a higher marginal federal income tax bracket. You'll probably owe the 10% early withdrawal penalty and maybe state income tax too. And the only way to replace money taken out of your traditional IRA is by making future contributions to refill the tank. That could take many years. In the meantime, you have less money to invest on a tax-deferred basis. The immediate tax consequences of taking an early Roth IRA withdrawals are usually less harsh. But once again, it could take years of future contributions to get yourself square to square one. The end result will be less federal income tax free money available when you reach retirement age. For those reasons, taking an early IRA withdrawal to solve a cash crisis should be a last resort. Unfortunately, sometimes that's the only option. And I think we have one last article here, also from Barron's. It's a little lighter. Five things you should know before retiring outside the U.S. Cheryl Winokur Monk, dated June 28, 2022, Barron's. And it's from the advisor section. A beachfront house in Uruguay or a lakeside villa in the Alps sounds like a retirement panacea. But a full-time move to a foreign country isn't as simple as it sounds. Without proper planning, clients' retirement dreams can easily be derailed by a host of financial, emotional, and health-related issues, financial advisors say. Here are five tips to help you soon-to-be retirees and their financial advisors plan ahead. Do the homework. Before pulling up roots, it's important to thoroughly research the foreign locale you're considering. This includes understanding the neighborhoods where you may want to live, safety consideration, the cost of living, which could be vastly different from what it might be if you stayed put. Don't forget to factor in food, shelter, transportation, healthcare, and taxes so you're confident you can afford the new location on a retiree's budget. To get a sense of culture and other issues that can come up, it can be helpful to thumb through a copy of Two International Living and Browsing Around online on Expat Exchange. There are also social media groups of people who have made similar moves and can serve as good information sources. Don't just say the market's hot, I want to sell my house and move to Costa Rica, says Bo Henderson, chief executive Rich Life Advisors in Gainesville, Georgia. It's important to map out a process. This is a major life transition. Understanding your banking options. Part of planning ahead process should include making sure you know how you're going to bank and access your money, Henderson says. Otherwise, you may run into unexpected roadblocks. He offers the example of a client who was testing retirement life in Mexico and requested the funds be wired from her U.S. bank to a local institution. The Mexican bank balked, setting a requirement for documentation that the client could only obtain from within the United States. Luckily, the client found another way to access her funds. But the example underscores the need to plan ahead, Henderson says. Even if you expect to transfer most of your savings to the new country, some funds like retirement accounts may not be portable as others. Also, be sure to check with the Social Security Administration to see where direct deposits can be made. Take a test drive. Advisors recommend clients take an extended vacation in the location where they're considering before settling there permanently. This could mean renting, maybe over the summer or for 6 month stretch. Henderson's clients did this type of trial run, renting out her Atlanta house for 6 months to defray the cost of an exploratory stay in Mexico. During this time, she realized she didn't want to live in the area she had initially expected to love. Only when she had decided with more certainty on a Mexican community she wanted to be a part of did she put her house in the U.S. on the market, Henderson says. Consult with an international tax expert. Even if you live full-time in a foreign country, you'll likely still have to pay U.S. taxes. That's because, according to the IRS rules, worldwide income of U.S. citizens or resident aliens living outside the country is subject to U.S. Income tax, regardless of where they live. There are two reasons on how foreign investment funds are taxed, and they can be reporting requirements based on how much money you hold in a foreign bank account. Financial planning, tax planning, succession planning. Those are the three that you can't ignore before you go. They might even determine where you can go to live, he says. Because each country has its own tax rules, it behooves investors to find an expert in the country they are considering. It's country specific. One person may be great for Mexico, but it's not great for Germany, she says. Think long term. Many couples retire to foreign countries when they are healthy, but they don't always think about what will happen if one or both of them need long-term care. How much this could cost, the types of facilities available, whether they can have family nearby to help, if needed, all important considerations. Medicare is another important factor to consider. Some people may decide not to sign up when they become eligible for a plan to move permanently outside the U.S. This can be a mistake because they can't be sure they will never need it, Casey says. Even though Medicare premiums can cost $700 a year, signing up at the time avoids hefty penalties associated with doing so later. Depending on where they move, retirees may need to be comfortable with socialized medicine, which means waiting longer for certain procedures. This is an important consideration, especially as retirees and their health care needs increase, says Max, co-founder of Miramar Capital in Northbrook, Illinois. Private insurance may be available for some countries. For an additional cost, which need to be factored into the budget, he says. These issues aren't necessarily showstoppers, Wasserman says, but they are things you have to process properly when you're thinking about a move. There's a correction and amplification at the bottom of this article. The Social Security Administration maintains a list of foreign countries where direct deposit payments are available. An early version of this article incorrectly stated the Social Security payments could not be deposited directly into foreign accounts. So, looks like we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it. And be sure to listen next time. I'm Jenna Walker, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Again, they can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content in this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or suggestions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.